a first experience with aerobatics, and in a T-28 no less. I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Thanks for downloading us today. ANN's managing editor, Rob Finfrock, recently got his introduction to aerobatic flight in a powerful, interesting, and historic airplane. Rob flew with Chip Lamb of the Trojan Flyers and decided to get back in touch by phone to share the plane's history with our listeners. Here's Rob's report.
Today I'm talking with Chip Lamb, who is the event coordinator and demo pilot for the Trojan Flyers, based for the moment anyway in Fort Worth, Texas. The group performs at air shows throughout the Southwest and South Central United States, flying an aircraft that has a very storied role in military aviation in the United States and throughout the world. Chip, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure, Rob. My pleasure.
Now, let's start with a brief history of the T-28 Trojan. Correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't this the last radial-engined aircraft commissioned by the U.S. military?
I think you're correct in that aspect. All the follow-ons to that were turboprop aircraft, and so I think you're correct. This was the follow-on to the North American T-6, and yes.
Okay. Why don't you tell me how the model progression played out? There have been a few variants of this aircraft.
Yeah, there have been. Within the United States, within the U.S. military, we've had four models, T-28 A, B, C, and D. The first model was a T-28 A, and when the military perceived the need for a high-performance trainer and at the end of World War II, they set about to several companies to ask them to come up with a design aircraft that the military could examine, determine what would be the next follow-on aircraft to the T-6. And North American design was the T-28A, which was the first model. Those aircraft came out with a seven-cylinder engine, and when the first aircraft came out, the Navy and several militaries deemed it as being underpowered. The U.S. Air Force did buy some of them, in fact, about 1,000 of them, but they saw limited service within the military. Then North American revisited the issues and came up with a nine-cylinder aircraft with an engine that was rated 1,425 horsepower, and that became the T-28B. Along with the bigger engine, it had a speed brake, slightly bigger wings, and the Navy looked at that aircraft and decided that that was a good choice for their primary flight trainer for the next generation of pilots. In fact, the Navy was so taken by the T-28B that they went back to North American and asked if North American could come up with a model that had a hook so that the Navy and Marine pilots could get their carrier quals with the T-28. North American went back and revisited the issue and came back with the T-28C, which did have a tail hook. The props were slightly smaller or shorter to accommodate carrier landings. And there were about 500 of those that were purchased by the U.S. Navy. Excuse me, about 300 that were purchased by the U.S. Navy. And they flew right up until August of 83. At, I think the last base that had the T-28 Bs and Cs within the military and within the Navy was Corpus Christi. I think they retired them in August of 83. And then also there was a fourth model called the T-28D, as in dog. What ended up happening is a foreign version of T-28 was built by the French. They called it the T-28F, or Fennec, which was French for Desert Fox. And the French used it during the counterinsurgency operations in Algeria in the late 50s and early 60s. And the U.S. military saw the value of that, and the U.S. military took several T-28As and Bs and converted them to the D model, and it was used in Southeast Asia. It was flown by the South Vietnamese Air Force, also by the Cambodian Air Force, the Thai Air Force, and by the Royal Laotian Air Force in Laos, which is where a lot of people know the real history behind the T-28 is where it served with the Royal Laotian Air Force and with the U.S. Raven Facts from the secret war that was waged in Laos during the war in Southeast Asia. Subsequently, the military retired all those aircraft except for the training command in the Navy, like I said, that flew them up until 83. And then what ended up happening is after they retired from the military, then private individuals got a hold of them and started flying them through the country at air shows and showing them some of the history of the North American product and the American military.
And in that group is the Trojan Flyers. Why don't you tell me a little bit about how this group got together?
Well, it's morphed over the years from its original intent of the group. The group was formed in the early 90s when several investors got together and found some T-28 that had been evacuated from Laos when the Laotian government fell to the communists. The aircraft had been evacuated to Thailand, spent some time in Thailand before they were dismantled, put in boxes, and were shipped to the Philippines. Spent many years in the Philippines, but these investors in the early 90s found these aircraft and decided to bring them to the States, and the idea was to rebuild the aircraft and sell them for a profit. Unfortunately, by the time the aircraft were put together, the market for T-28s the bottom had fallen out of it, and so the investors realized they couldn't make a profit by selling the aircraft. So these gentlemen decided, well, what we'll do is we'll just fly the airplanes, because they were fun to fly, neat airplane, and the idea was to fly the airplanes until the market recovered. Now, the market never did recover, it hasn't yet. And so over the time, different partners flew the aircraft, and then the idea was, well, we had several partners who had been in the Reno air races, so we took the airplanes out to Reno and raced them. And then the idea became to fly them at air shows, and then the idea became to do formation flying in air shows, and then that's where we get today with the Trojan Flyers. Now we don't do any racing out at Reno, and we're not necessarily interested in selling the aircraft right now, but we are interested in flying around the country showing off the aircraft and what the United States military used to have.
Yeah, you're having too much fun flying them to think about selling them, right?
Yeah, actually, that's probably the case. If someone came up and offered us a lot of money, we might sell them, but we're enjoying ourselves too much to sell them now.
Now, something that struck me today when I had the opportunity to look at one of your aircraft is that this is a plane that is obviously being flown and, you know, at performances throughout the southern United States. It's not a hangar queen. That's not a disparaging comment by any means against the maintenance of the aircraft, but this is obviously an aircraft that I would say is, you know, in similar condition to what it would be actually flying in the military. Is that a fair statement?
Well, we'd like to think so, although we don't have the funds, the parts, the personnel to keep them up like the U.S. military did. The military flew these two or three hops a day during the week. We don't put anywhere near that on them right now, but we do put about 100 hours per airplane on these three aircraft. Now, compared to other T-28 owners, that's probably double or triple what the average T-28 owner does. So we're somewhere in between the average warbird pilot and what the military put on them. So, it's a little easier versus what we did with the military, but we don't have the resources to keep them up like they did. Yet, we fly them a lot more than the average warbird pilot, and so that gives us some issues about keeping them flying, keeping them fully aerobatic, and also all three of these aircraft were built in 1953. So right now we're looking at 54-year-old aircraft, and along with that comes some aircraft aging issues. So we have to be cognizant of that and making sure that that doesn't become a safety issue.
That's understandable. Well, if it's any consolation, today it did not feel like I was flying in a 54-year-old aircraft.
Well, I appreciate that, and I don't either. Until it's time to do annual inspection on the aircraft, and I have to get inside of it and get tearing around there, and then you find something and it says Kilroy was here and the date is 1962, then you start realizing how old the aircraft was.
And realizing that particular widget hasn't been assembled in at least 40 years.
Yes, and the fact that these three airplanes are actually older than I am.
Now, this is a three-ship team, and for the moment you're flying, I believe, two pilots during a standard airshow routine with the full team. Two pilots fly formation, and a third fly solo. As a matter of fact, you fly solo, is that correct?
That is correct. Now, originally we started flying just as solos, and that was about 10 years ago. Then a couple of the partners and pilots got together and said that we think that we'd be more marketable to fly as formation aerobatics. And so for many years, we market ourselves just as a two-ship formation aerobatic team. And that continued up until about three years ago, when we decided that the two-ship aerobatic team, while it was nice, At times, it wasn't as high tempo as some of the other multi-ship demonstration teams. So we added the third airplane, with the idea being that the solo aircraft, with me flying it, would be at show center while the two-ship formation is repositioning and coming back to show center. Now, we do some three-ship formation flying. If the runway allows it, we do a three-ship formation takeoff. We do several passes as a three-ship with our wings overlapping and real close and tight as we come by the crowd. But overall, the idea is we'll have the formation aerobatics at show center, and then a few seconds later, I'll come through doing a solo maneuver, and then back to the two-ship, and then back to me, and so forth, till the end of the show.
That's a similar concept to the Thunderbirds or the Blue Angels, for example.
That's true.
The crowd's attention is on the diamond formation, and suddenly out of nowhere, the solo pilot comes screaming by.
That's exactly correct. And the idea is that the formation always has to exit away from the show center to reposition and gain energy to come back for the next maneuver. And it's during that time period while it's repositioning that there's a lull if you don't have the solo. So actually, if copying is a serious form of flattery, we copied it from the jet teams and decided it was a good idea. Hence, I fly in the solo.
Well, you might as well copy from the best.
it works for them, and it seems to work for us. We're real proud of the product in the sense that at every 15 to 20 seconds, there's someone at show center doing a maneuver.
We'll hear more with Rob Finfrock and Chip Lamb in just a moment. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and no ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to our Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Platt. We continue now with Rob Finfrock's interview with Chip Lamb of the Trojan Flyers.
The first time I saw a T-28, which to my knowledge was at Oshkosh 2005, it wasn't one of yours, it was a private owner. My first impression of the aircraft was the word sturdy. And, they sit tall on their gear. I can walk underneath the wingtip,
yeah.
which struck me considering the size of the aircraft. But it didn't necessarily strike me as the most agile looking aircraft, but these are actually surprisingly aerobatic capable airplanes, as I got to experience today.
Yeah, well, now, you've touched on several different issues there. Yes, it is a sturdy aircraft, and it was built that way because it was intended use as a trainer, and knowing the history of the T-6 and some of the other trainers, you'd better build them sturdy or they weren't going to last long. North American also had a reputation for building a good product, and here we are flying the same airplane 54 years later, so I think that reputation was
was well-deserved. Now, you talked about how it sits high on its gear. Well, part of the intent of building this airplane was so that it would be easily accessible for maintainers. And so that was actually intentional, so that maintainers could get underneath the aircraft and access it, but access it without having to climb up on top of ladders. So just about everything on the aircraft, including the aircraft engine, is easily accessible from the ground. Now, let's see, the other issue you brought up about the aerodynamics capabilities of it, or the aerobatic capabilities of it, is that the aircraft is very stable. It's not unstable such as some of the higher performance aircraft like the F-16, some of the real high performance extras aircraft like that. It was designed to be stable for student training. But along with stability, it had to be fully aerobatic, and North American did a good job of blending the two together. Now, because of the structure of the aircraft and the fact that it was built in the late 50s, these aircraft can't pull the plus 9 or 10 Gs and then minus 4 or 5 Gs that a lot of the newer aerobatic competition aircraft can pull. You will typically see us pull no more than 4 Gs and no less than, minus 1 G in the aerobatic routine to stay way within the safety boundary of the aircraft. But that's enough. That's actually more than enough. You're not going to see us doing Lumshavox because that would overstress our aircraft. You're not going to see us doing outside loops. You're not going to see us doing turning loops or anything like that, because that would grossly overstress the 50-plus-year-old aircraft. What you will see us doing is a series of aerobatic maneuvers well within the military manual capabilities. That it is still a wonderful combination of art and mechanics when you see the airplanes fly. It really is fun. And when you see them fly in formation, then you look at that and go, that's fun.
Now, something that struck me interesting about the history of the aircraft, going back to the fact that this is a radial-powered bird. This plane was put into production well after World War II, which was, in a sense, the swan song for radial-engined aircraft.
There was a while there that between radials and inline engines, there's always been pros and cons. As it turns out, the engine that North American went with, which is Wright Cyclone, and they were known for the radial engines.
Mm-hmm.
And now, the one thing that was good with what North American did with the T-28 is they made it look like their follow-on aircraft, which was the F-86. And that was really what sold the product to the military, because if you look at the cockpit of an F-86 and then look at the cockpit of a T-28, they look very close. In fact, even the swallow quadrant is almost exactly alike. And so there was a lot of value that went into producing an aircraft that allowed the jet pilots to learn on and then transition to the jets. Because at that time, we were walking some uncharted territory. There was no jet trainer. So how do you train people to fly jets without a jet trainer? And the T-28 was the answer to that.
Well, and you bring up a good point, because on the ground you can see a number of similarities between the T-28 and the F-86. The tricycle gear configuration, of course. Also, I would imagine, if they had decided to go with an inline power plant from that era, the aircraft would have had a much longer nose, which would have struck a pilot transitioning to an F-86 somewhat oddly, because those are fairly stub-nosed aircraft as well.
That's true. You're absolutely correct on that point, yes.
Now, we've spoken a little bit about the history of the Trojan Flyers and your current routine. Let's talk a little bit about what the future holds. Now, the reason that I met up with you this morning is that you are in the process of relocating from Hicks Air Field in Fort Worth to a new facility at a little airport called Midway Regional, which, as the name implies, is midway between the towns of Waxahachie and Midlothian.
All that's true, Rob. We recently just lost one of our partners, and in fact, he was a founding partner, and famous air race and demonstration pilot in his own right, Neil Anderson. Neil Anderson was actually the owner of the hangar where we keep our aircraft now. As it turns out, that with Neil's untimely death, not only did we lose a partner, but we also lost a landlord. So it's an attempt to be proactive on to where we're going to be for the next few years. We went around the North Texas area looking for some hangar space, and the financial aspects of it, the location, and the training facilities all ended up taking us down to Midway Regional Airport. And so we decided to build our own hangar down there, and part of that today's festivities was to break ground on the building of that hangar. We're looking forward to moving into that sometime later this year after completion. And with that, we're going to move all three aircraft down there. Now, you say, what's the future hold? Well, we're probably going to stick with the three-ship routine for the foreseeable future. I don't see us buying a fourth aircraft or incorporating a fourth aircraft into our routine, but there are several things that we can incorporate in the three-ship routine that we want to continue to do and look to do that in the future. The other thing that we would like is, right now we're a graying air force within the Trojan Flyers, and we would like some young, energetic pilots who want to do some of this high-performance aerobatic flying in a warbird. If they're interested, this is a great way of doing it. It's fun. It's a really neat piece of history to be able to sit in and fly. Doing the formation flying upside down while you're going 300 knots has a thrill to it. Has a thrill to it that's hard to pass up.
It's a bit of an understatement. Now, as far as the funding for the team, do you have any current sponsorships of the Trojan Flyers?
No, we don't. We're actively seeking a sponsorship. We have several sponsors that we've approached that we can't seem to get our foot in the door. We welcome the opportunity to fly for someone. Right now, we just feel like the real sponsors for the team is North American Aviation Company and the United States Military. I'm a former Air Force pilot. The other two demo pilots are former Marine pilots. And what that does is allows us to, if nothing else, to show the military aspect of our country and the training that we receive.
Well, I must say you represent those parties very well.
Well, we appreciate that, and we hope we continue to do that. It's very rewarding to meet a veteran who has flown the T-28, either in the Marines, Navy, or the Air Force. I even had the opportunity to bump into a former Royal Laotian Air Force pilot who had actually flown. May have actually flown the aircraft that I was flying that day.
Really?
And that was an extremely rewarding experience because, as it turns out, that when his country fell to the communists, that he had grabbed his family and put them in an airplane, a T-28, and evacuated his family in a T-28 to Thailand. And as I explained to that gentleman, he may have actually flown that aircraft. And so I let him sit in it and have a few minutes. He had commented that as close to his home country as he had been since he had left. And so it was very, very, very rewarding experience.
That's the ultimate compliment I can think of if you're in this position of flying this aircraft, say, having somebody who's flown it from such a interesting and storied background, and especially possibly the actual aircraft.
Yes. It was just an irony that day I was there with the aircraft that we had recovered from boxes that had been stored at the Philippines. The aircraft comes complete with three patched bullet holes. And as I explained to him, he may have actually flown that specific aircraft.
Really?
So that was, like I said, it was a very rewarding moment.
That's fantastic. Chip Lamb is the demonstration pilot and event coordinator for the Trojan Flyers, and you might just see him at an air show near you in the near future. Chip, thank you very much for taking some time out of your schedule to take me along for a ride today and also to talk with ANN listeners.
Thank you very much, Rob. It was a pleasure. Always a pleasure to fly with someone who can appreciate that type of flying and that type of aircraft. And we welcome the chance to do that with anyone.
Well, I don't think I've stopped grinning since we landed.
Neither have I. It was a pleasure.
Thank you very much, Chip.
Thank you.
Rob Finfrock is ANN's managing editor. Chip Lamb is event coordinator and demo pilot for the Trojan Flyers. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.